Alexis, not Siri.
Okay. All right. Are we ready?
Right.
Like that.
Whoa.
7 o'clock.
To wait 10 seconds.
So we'll. Well, I've got 7 o'clock on network time. So.
That's impressive, right there.
All right, well, welcome everybody. We will call to order tonight's regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission. It's Thursday, October 24th. We'll start with roll call. This is Commission Chair Aaron Tau.
Commissioner Bowers.
Present.
Commissioner Greenberg.
Present.
Commissioner Cola.
Present.
Commissioner McFarland.
Present.
Commissioner Miller.
Present.
Commissioner Torgerson.
Present.
And Chair Cola.
Present.
Still here.
All right, first item up is approval of tonight's agenda. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner McFarland, seconded by Commissioner Greenberg to approve tonight's agenda. All in favor say aye.
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 None opposed. We have an agenda. Next item is approval of the September 26th Planning Commission minutes. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve minutes.
Second.
Okay, it's been the motion to approve from Commissioner Miller, second Commissioner Torgerson. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 None opposed. The minutes are approved. I don't see anybody from the public, so we'll pass by that for the moment. And first item up then on our agenda for commission discussion is minor amendments to boundary line adjustment code provisions. Dave, are you going to lead that discussion? All right.
Right. And tonight we have some extremely boring ordinances for you. This is what we do. So let's try to make it a little more interesting. Boundary line adjustments are used quite often. You cannot form a new lot, but if you need to change the boundary lines that are between two existing lots for one reason or another, let's say you have a building built over the old property line and you want to move it so that that's legal, or you have a small lot and a big lot, you want to make them equal so you can build on them. Those kinds of things are reasons that the boundary line adjustments are used. It doesn't require all of the hoopla that a subdivision, a small minor plat or a P-plat, regular subdivision would take, but it does require that you have certain engineering standards met and you do certain things, mostly through a surveyor, to make sure everything's recorded properly and that the dimensions are accurate and that sort of thing. So we noticed in using our BLA ordinance, as we've seen with quite a few, that there were some clarifications that would be good to have in it to make it easier for the surveyors and the applicants to use and easier for us to use. There are about five bullet points that I'm just going to indicate to you are the subject of the changes. First, we had a legal review, and our survey consultant also took a look at the document to ensure that we're meeting current law and standard practices. And as you would imagine, from time to time the laws have changed, and you have to keep up with it. So we had both the surveyor and our city attorney through her office take a look at what does the law say today and are we compliant. And we found some tweaks we had to put in it. The King County Assessor's Office provided input. We are now, and have in the past, had their signature required for approval. And they're saying that that isn't required. We think it's a good idea because they're another set of eyes. If they see something is wrong, and if they're going to sign it, they look at it once they're believed, then we just left that in. There's a new section that lists requirements for boundary line adjustment applications, because if you don't get the right information, it takes a long time to get through the process, because you kick it back and they have to put more information in. So we wanted it to be a little more user-friendly that way. Adding the property corners need to be staked prior to recording to ensure that it happens. It wasn't as definitive that you have to stake corners, but we all want that, because we can always go out on our own property and find out where our property corners are. If you're going to pay to have a survey done, you want to have something in the field that represents that. Also, we're adding that the conveyance legal descriptions must appear on the face of the BLA with the recording number of the transfer deed. This is information that tells you exactly where everything is you need to, and it tells you what the meets and bounds description is. So these are the major issues that we addressed in updating this. you can see in it from the red line copy what information's been included, either added or reworded, and a lot of that has to do with the requirements for the applications, what you submit, making that very clear. Other provisions in here that are fairly clear, some revisions on page 6 and 7 to make sure that we're compliant with what we need to do today, and to really remove stuff that's superfluous from it. So we think that it's a lot cleaner, shorter, easier document to use now. We do process probably on the order of maybe one a month of boundary line adjustments, because there are various reasons people need them. So it's a very commonly used method, and we want to make it cheap and easy because it's not like a subdivision. If you're going to do a boundary line adjustment, you don't want to spend an arm and a leg doing it. So I think we've got a little bit easier process to follow here. Be happy to answer any questions you have. It's really a very simple ordinance, and the process is fairly simple.
Okay. We'll open it up then for commissioners with questions or comments. Anybody want to start us off?
Yeah. I just have two real simple things.
Yes.
First page of Exhibit A, paragraph B. Two questions on that. It says the survey shall be provided on 18 by 24 inch sheets of paper on a scale of at least 1 inch equals 100 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So does at least mean that I can submit at 1 inch equals 50 feet? Or does it mean that I can submit at 1 inch equals 200 feet?
At least means this is the smallest resolution that you would have. So if you drop it down to a lesser number equaling 1 inch, it's larger and easier to read. So I think the people who prepare these are in the main surveyors, and I think they understand how to interpret that. But
okay,
what it means is that you have to have a resolution to read that's at least at this size if you want to make it bigger, you can make it bigger.
Okay, as long as there's no issue with it,
right,
when the surveyor comes in.
And then
the second question is 18 by 24 inch sheet of paper, have you, with that type of a scale, have you ever had an issue with larger lots not being able to be shown at that scale?
No, we haven't. It's fairly large size, and it's what the county prefers.
Okay,
that's the requirement, right? Is that the requirement?
Yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, but in terms of depicting what you need to on a very size lot,
yeah,
very well.
Okay. And then in the paragraph below that,
mm-hmm,
it talks about second line of number one lines, mm-hmm, those that are being moved or removed shown as a dash line.
Mm-hmm.
I'm focusing on the term moved. And then right after that it says those that are proposed to be relocated shown as a solid line. Isn't move and relocate?
Yeah, that should be clarified, and I'll we'll try to
maybe that. Maybe if you just take out move or.
Yes.
So it says those that are being removed shown as a dashed line, and those that are being proposed to be relocated shown as a solid line.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
I think the idea is here's where it is now, you move it over here,
right,
but actually it disappears when you put the note.
Those are my only two questions on this.
It's
boring ordinance.
Yeah, sorry about that.
We need a. Anybody else?
I got a couple.
Yep.
A quick question about the kind of process for this. Is this something that, when you guys get something like this, is this a pretty quick turnaround?
Yes, it is.
30 days?
It's administrative.
Okay.
And usually, within a couple of weeks, we can at least have a review and get back to the applicant and their surveyor with what they need to do to correct it.
So going along with that idea, and admit I didn't look up the chapter 58.09 of the B paragraph there, but one thing I thought would help here, since the beginning of the session was the red that we're changing, I felt from the memo that the sense I got was the idea of putting all the requirements up front,
right
in the document, in the code, put it up front so that you're not caught by something later on.
Right.
I think it would be handy to make that second to last change about being state corners and having a record of survey being done by a surveyor.
Yeah.
I feel like it'd be handy to have that in the beginning of the draw. Because when I was reading through it, I felt like as I got to that, I realized, oh, wait, there's a whole other thing I have to do.
Whole other set.
Yeah. At the end of the code, which is what we're trying to do here.
That's a good comment. Great. That's good.
So just maybe comment up front saying, you know,
indicate. Yeah, license surveyor must prepare the documents. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And putting the lock orders.
Right.
Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Oh, you know, I got a few.
You got some.
All right. Also, but so to James's question, just cover. We're really turning these in 30 days. I'm impressed.
Yeah, we're getting BLAs out of here very quick.
I'm
very
super fast. Impressed by that. I can tell you that your friends at King County are not even within four times that.
Yeah, one of the things we're really trying to do now, I don't know if y'all know it, we've lost one of our engineers, a very bright guy, Mike Sippo, is really smart as a whip. He managed to get a job five blocks from his home, so because of the deal with that. And Lynn has taken another job. I don't know if you all know, but her husband accepted a job in Durango, Colorado. So she's doing a big change. She's about 4 months along with her second child, which is a girl this time. So she's going to be staying at home a little bit, and she's going to give that a try. Now, with her level of energy, I don't know how long that'll last, but you know, we're really going to miss both of them. But what that's really caused us to do is to say, how do we reorganize? Because I don't really organize around org charts. I organize around the talent and the role, because that's a better way to get things done. And it provides you some flexibility to incentivize people and give them the kind of work that they like to do. So we're kind of redistributing a lot of this, and it's really made us think about where can we expedite things to get them off our desk, things that are fairly simple, because when you take things in the order in which they're received, you're not taking the real easy BLAs and popping them out, and then the larger subdivisions get in the way, and you're working on those, and it just doesn't play well with customer service. So what we're starting to do is to really allocate the workload, and because people have habits and they do it a certain way, I'm starting to insert myself into my micromanaging a little bit, saying, hey, get the things that are really quick and easy to do, done, and off your desk. And we're also trying to judiciously use some of our consultants that we brought in occasionally. Our guys, you know, really get to know our code and our process really well, and then they don't trust anybody else, and I'm telling them, you know, work yourself into a grave with not having people here if you don't take some time to train and to oversee and to direct it. So I've heard some of your comments, Rob, about expediting, and I think part of that is just how do you manage workload, and how do you get people to be a little bit more efficient, and how they get things done. So we're kind of drilling down on that. I do not think we're going to replace Lynn right away. I think Bree, her assistant, has tremendous capabilities, and we want to let her grow. We want to expand her job description, give her a little more money, and see what she can do. And I've been doing a lot of the economic development. We are going to get another engineer. We need somebody for that position. We do have a consultant in town that's been working for us that we're going to bring on board. But boy, trying to hire engineers in this economy is really tough. So part of what we're doing with these ordinance revisions, you see, is to try to get this cleanup work done so that the documents we're working with and the clients we're working with have a clearer picture of what we need.
Good.
So that's really the topic of the second item on your agenda.
For you to jump?
Yeah.
Nice try. And I think, so do these go through the set fee? Just curiosity.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I know when we say state corners required, I agree we would want that. Mm-hmm. Just I know that King County doesn't actually require in most instances.
Yeah.
I think my only other question is on page 4, which would be number 9, the last item there. Calculations which demonstrate required yards of the International Building Code. I don't know what that means.
Well, I think there are areas that are required most of these come out of our code in terms of having the proper setbacks. But I don't know what they mean by the International Building Code accepting for. There are some firewalls required if you don't have certain setbacks from your property line.
Right.
So if you know what kind of a structure is going to go on or what the allowable area of the structure is, you have to make sure that the lot, the remainder lot you have, A, meets the code in terms of minimum lot size, which then would also catch this particular provision by having enough setback for fire.
You know, if this was one that came out of legal, because I've not seen any reference to building code ever in a BLA before.
I don't know, but I can find out.
I'm a little nervous about that one. It doesn't seem necessarily appropriate in a BLA.
It's in the current code.
It was just moved from the current.
It was just moved.
97,
I don't know.
I think that's what it is.
I think it has to do with fire.
It's firewall.
Would it be better to have that designated as what part of the code then, if that's what we're
In the International Building Code, there is a particular section that deals with the architect.
And I got that. Where my head went was, and there was a piece that was talking about an existing structure and making sure that it met our required setbacks.
Right.
That I got.
Right.
And I just wasn't sure. Typically, I mean, even though usually somebody's planning to build, and that's why they're doing it, you're not citing a building at the time you're doing it.
You could have, for instance, give me an example where this could come up.
Okay.
You could have a non-conforming setback, a non-conforming building on the property, and in doing your lot line adjustment, you don't want to increase the non-conformity, but you also don't want to place a lot line at a location where you have to put a 2-hour firewall or something in.
Right.
It would have to modify the building. So if you're moving a lot line and it meets the minimum requirements, but you have a pre-existing non-conforming situation, you want to make sure you're not creating a fire hazard by where you're putting that lot line. So I think those are the kinds of things. BLAs are quite often used just to allow for a greater use of the property, because you have the ability with a lot line adjustment to do more on the property. We're finding a lot more people are doing that as housing gets more expensive. And so you have to watch out for the existing conditions and make sure you're not making them worse.
Rob, you got one?
Thing I was curious about is on page 6, under the conceptual review, it mentions pay for an optional pre-app meeting. I thought we typically did pre-apps without charge to encourage it.
No, what we have an initial meeting for free.
Right.
Our first meeting.
Exactly.
And then we have the pre-application process where they come in and they're willing to put their MOU forward with the deposit.
Okay.
And then what we do is we walk through all of the detail of fees and application and document in a letter the following day, and that goes out to everybody so that they have usually about a 5-8-page letter that documents things. Some people say, look, I don't want to just come in. It's great that you have a free thing, but I know what I want to do. Let's just get it done.
Mm-hmm.
They want to come in and get the letter as soon as they can, get the application as soon as they can. So we allow people to do that if they want to do it.
Okay. So, David, are you looking for some action tonight on this?
If you want to recommend approval, you can do that. If you'd like me to bring it back cleaned up, we can do it that way. It's at your pleasure.
Do we need to have a public hearing on this?
We'll probably have the public hearing at the council level for this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just because it's a simple administrative.
Right.
Okay.
Right. It's very simple. And I don't think we're going to have a lot of comment on it. So if you'd like us to bring it back, clean up, we can do that, or we can take on it.
Well, I think yours was pretty straightforward. It was pretty minor, but Dave, you had a recommendation.
Yeah, I think it's simple enough. I'm okay with it.
So can we get Jim just restate them? I'm happy to take action tonight if we get it restated that we all know what we're doing.
Well, I do know that, at least in terms of what James indicated, where we list in the front, where we list the requirements, I think he would like to add to that the licensed surveyor has to prepare the document, and that it does require the cornice taking. Those were the two things I think you included.
Yep.
And where are those currently? Because I don't think we want to duplicate it. You want
to just move them.
Move them to that section. And then also on page 3, I have that change where just take out the words move or in the mm-hmm. second line of number 1.
Right. Right. Okay.
So you're clear on mm-hmm. the amendments or the suggested edits.
If those two amendments are included in your motion,
so does somebody want to make a motion?
I move that we recommend approval of the proposed changes to Chapter 17.28, boundary line adjustments as amended.
And moved by Commissioner Greenberg. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second, Commissioner Bovers. Any discussion? All those in favor of approving the ordinance before us on boundary line adjustments, subject to the administrative edits that David will incorporate, raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None opposed? Carries. Thank you.
Okay.
The next topic.
Yeah.
Binding site plans.
Yes, this is, we processed a couple of binding site plans through the community. Just explain to everybody what a binding site plan is. That applies, and you'll find this in the second sentence of our first page here. This chapter of the code really deals with dividing land for commercial and industrial zone property, mobile home parks, trailer parks, or condominiums. So it's kind of a mix. Now, usually when you subdivide, say with a residential subdivision, you use a preliminary and final plat process, which is outlined in the RCWs, and most local codes reflect that pretty clearly. And the way that process works is that the first phase of it, your preliminary maps, their preliminary plats are the discretionary, meaning you can condition them. That's where all of your conditions and your studying of the map and resolving the problems occurs. The final plat is pretty much an engineered drawing that can be recorded and describes clearly by meets and bounds and other descriptions where the rights of way are, where the easements are, where the lot lines are, and all of that. But that more so is associated with the improvements and the final document that gets recorded. What I noticed in our current BSP ordinance, because I used it for two different condominium projects, we haven't had a lot of larger commercial projects where you have several lots on it, so we really haven't processed much of that. But I did process, administratively, a 25-unit condominium project, two-story, on Park Street. And we did process a smaller one. It was a duplex condominium. In both cases, we found that working with the ordinance to clarify what they needed to submit to us and what we needed to review it properly was just non-existent. Our BSP ordinance is skinny. There's not much in it. And what we found in the industry is for years, people have not been processing residential condominiums because of liability issues. It's a real ambulance chaser paradise for people who want to sue on things like workmanship or leaks and things like that. So in many states, I remember back in the 80s when I worked in the Bay Area, we had tons of condominiums coming in. And there were a lot of condominium conversions that happened during that period of time because people want to make money by converting their apartments into condos. Well, all of this litigation started and the whole industry went flat. People closed their doors. No more condominiums for years and years. Last year, in the state of Washington, they modified the RCWs to limit liability and to stop a lot of the lawsuits. As a result of that, we're starting to get condominiums coming in again. So we really didn't have any reason to use a lot of the condominium portion of the BSP ordinance until the economy changed and the avenue for producing those was more positive. So as we went through it, particularly with Eileen, our city attorney, and I, we scratch our heads and say, you know, she processed projects in Texas. I've done them in Oregon and California. I worked under these kinds of laws there. And I said, gee, there's not much guidance for people here. And folks took advantage of it. They said, all we have to do is prepare the documents we can record, and we really don't have to have you act on this. Well, no, it says in our code that we have to administratively approve it. Well, then they're saying, okay, but you don't have a lot in here in the code that tells me what I have to do, so I'm going to do the minimum. And if you want to look at things like common area and who's going to maintain it, and we have a lot of LID facilities, which are drainage facilities that are part of your landscaping, those have to be maintained by their homeowners association. So we require a lot of information to know exactly what they're going to maintain, how they're going to build it, what are the instructional documents if I buy a condo, to know that in my homeowner's dues here, I've got to take care of certain things in the common area. So there was a lot of information that we thought should be in here so we can ensure, from a consumer protection point of view, that people can find this stuff and they can find out what's going on. So I found it very difficult to work with our code, and we had a suggestion that was made to us by an attorney for one of the people processing this larger condo. And she said, you know, I've worked with a couple of ordinances in this state that mimic a regular P-plat and final plat like you do with regular subdivisions. And that made a lot of sense to me, because when you come through with the beginning of at least a condominium, or say a commercial project that has different lots in it, you want to have the mutual access easements for parking and all those kinds of things that you normally have outlined up front, anything you condition it to do, any conditions you want in the project should happen up front while they're doing the more schematic work. And then the final document that they record, in the case of a condominium, they don't go out and survey it until they have poured the foundations, because what you own in a condominium is paint-thin space and then an undivided interest in the rest of it. So if you have 25 units, you own 1/25 of the structure and all of the common area facilities. But what you have title to is airspace. You own the inside of that place. That's yours, period. So you don't identify what your space is until those foundations are poured, because you can't do it with the exactitude that it requires. So I see this very much as a two-phase thing. Let's look at our site plan. Let's look at our common area requirements. So let's look at our access and all those things, drainage, everything that you condition. Let's do it in phase one so they know what they're dealing with. And then in the second phase, the final BSP, the final map, they bring in the recorded document, and we make sure that it meets the requirements for recordation. So we mimic that process in here at the suggestion of this legal counsel, which I thought was a great idea. So what we've done in here, I've outlined a number of things that it does, and it's kind of boring to go through all of them, but all of these things are kind of similar to what we looked at. If you're going to submit a map and you're an engineer, you want to know, you want a checklist of what you have to put on the plans. So we made sure that was in there. For both the preliminary BSP and the final BSP application. And one of the things that we didn't have in our code, and this is extremely important, Scott, I know that you'll say amen to this, we didn't have any definition of when you're vested. Mm-hmm. Now, vesting means that your project cannot be withdrawn or rejected or taken away. You have received a commitment from the city that your application is complete and it will go forward.
So it will go forward under the rules.
Under the rules, you can still reject for other. Right, but you can't say your application is incomplete or something like that and reject it. You have to have a letter of completion. You know, everything's in. Okay, we'll process it. Got to follow the rules. But you are vested at that point. And that's the point at which you get your concurrency certificates for water, sewer, your transportation, and stormwater. And it gives a degree of certainty that people want to have before they continue to invest money in projects. So vesting is very important to the applicant. Mm-hmm. We had no place in our BSP ordinance that told you when you vested. And a lot of people could interpret that to say, you're not vested until you have a building permit. There's a lot of risk in that. Mm-hmm. So what we did is we put a vesting provision in here. It says when your application is complete, you have everything in, you're vested, we move forward. You're only at risk insofar as you have to meet what the code says. But, you know, you're not going to lose your project at that point, and you're in line for sewer, you're in line for water, and you have a certain provision of a certainty there. So we did put that in here. A lot of things with regard to infrastructure, parks, critical areas, if you have a wetland or something like that, and planning features need to be shown on the plans. We didn't have a lot of this listed before. So you're looking at a plan, and you're trying to figure out, how do I evaluate this to make sure we're not impacting shorelines or critical areas or things that we need to have shown. So let's make sure they're shown. Identification of conditions of use, maintenance, restrictions on redevelopment of shared open space. If you're going to reuse the space later and it's common, what can you and can't you do? What stays within the bounds of what was approved, and what would violate that? Maintenance, we're always interested in that. We always want to make sure that they have provisions, that the landscaping, the building, and everything will be maintained, that the LID areas will be maintained, so that we'll continue to have good stormwater transmission. It gives you the length of time your approval is good for. We didn't have that either. It's in the 60 months, and we can get up to 3 years extension subject to certain criteria. There are a lot of reasons why people get projects approved. Economy changes, something happens, they want to keep that approval alive. You want the project, so you want to give them a little bit of wiggle room there. The engineering review requirements, that's really important, because the toughest review in this city for any development project is engineering review. And any of those of you who have been through the process know that really well. Identifies that sale or lease requires BSP application submitted and lists submittal information required. Certainly you cannot transmit or sell property unless it's properly subdivided. Limits the final BSP from modifying the provisions of the preliminary. So this is an assurance that if you've turned everything in and we give you all of your conditions, when you're done with the preliminary, it's over. There's not another bite at the apple, so that people realize I'm good now and just get my documents ready to record. All fees and submittal requirements are clear. Limited alterations and for vacation of the BSP, under what provisions can you do that? And format and plan content for the recording of the documents. So we feel like looking at this, it's easier for us to use. It's an easier document for us to be using.
So David, before we get into the commission discussion, I just want to get a quick process check, because looking at the agenda items for November 14th, the first one is a public hearing on the boundary line adjustments, which we just talked about, which I thought I heard you say would go to the council as public hearing instead of up.
Well, I was wrong. I think I'm allowing Mike to make those determinations, because he's the kind of the shepherd of things to the commission.
Okay.
And so it looks like we will be coming back to you on this, but that's fine, because you've okayed us to go ahead and make those changes and bring it back.
I guess I just want to clarify that the same didn't apply, or that they would both be coming back.
Yeah,
we know the context.
Yeah, I think what we're looking to do is to introduce them tonight.
Yeah.
Get them clarified, and then get them right.
And you want any feedback, suggestions that can be incorporated?
So we clean them up, and then for the hearing, we can have a document that's a final document. I apologize, I didn't look hard at that myself.
Okay.
So any questions on the BSP?
Commissioners? Questions?
My question, clarity. This is changing the whole BSP ordinance, not just specific to condos.
Right.
But being driven by the needs for updating.
Yeah, there are two great needs. One was just as an operational document to use, to process for me and for the people who apply.
Yeah.
I found it very, very uninformative and not clear enough. And what I found is that in order to expedite things for their client, this particular engineer was really taking a lot of shortcuts. Mm-hmm. And there's information in the engineering review that they would have had to submit anyway. So I wanted to be able to make this clear as to what we're working with. The second is, that last year in 2018, when they passed these amendments to the condominium law to get rid of a lot of liability issues, there were some changes to the submittal requirements under the RCWs that we were reflecting in here. And a lot of those had to do with how you showed information and how people would get it. And I think that the reason I ran this by Kenyon's office is that it was very difficult for me to read through the RCWs and make a connection between are we compliant with everything that's in the RCW. So the two things drove it. One, it wasn't a very good document to use for me or for the applicant. And secondly, and I have tons of questions. I go to the other staff members and I say, well, when you process a BSP, if somebody says, where is it in the code, what authority do you use to ask for things, and how do you process them? And I was really surprised at how cavalierly people dealt with them. In fact, when we went out and looked at other ordinances in the Puget Sound area, a lot of them were very, very light on what they asked for. And it's not that you want to over-engineer the thing, but you want to have a document where people know what to turn in. Everybody knows what the rules are, so you can get to it quickly. And if laws change at the state level and you get yourself wrapped around the axle because you don't know what they are,
right,
that could be a problem.
So I think I would tack on to that and say, having processed a BSP through the city, I agree that there was not a lot to go on, and staff and I struggled with that process. Yeah. Well, we got through, but so clarity is certainly there. I think that also where I'm going with my thought concept is that still both of the main items driving had to do with condominium and related, and I totally kind of get where you're going with that. I'm wondering though, do we need all of that same process, since this is also covering commercial and industrial, which should in many ways be much similar, mm-hmm. right?
And I think
is there something that this should maybe be two sections, one that applies to residential uses and one that's...
Well, as I look through it,
that, just a thought.
Yeah, as I did about 20 years of commercial processing from a developer standpoint, mm-hmm. I didn't find things that are particularly onerous.
Okay.
The way I view these things, at least from a developer's standpoint, the more clarity I have, the more predictability I have. Mm-hmm. And I need to know the ordinance if I'm a developer as well as the staff does. And when I come in, I can cite certain things as I go through it and help lead them through it because I know what's going on. And I find that that's very helpful and it builds trust, right? Because everybody's trying to meet the same objective. And I don't find this as overly onerous to a commercial project. But if the BSP, because of the way that it's written into our RCWs, has to apply to all of this, then I want to make sure that we're covering all of it. But I don't think it's onerous for the commercial stuff. And certainly our disposition, as you all know, is if we get commercial stuff in here, we're going to put it on top and get it through the process.
Yeah. I think this would be a good one for our business outreach group to
keep. Yes, yeah, definitely. And we are getting more interest from condominiums. We have a work study on Tuesday night, and the council kind of went into the meeting without giving us any preview of what they want to talk about, and what they were concerned about was something from a retreat they had in looking at our zoning map and seeing neighborhood commercial, and they felt like we had too much neighborhood commercial. I feel like we don't have enough, because what we're finding is we have people like, for instance, it's Tractor Supply. They're looking for 3 to 4 acres commercially zoned. We don't have many sites that are that large. And so what we've done is we've allowed people, we've been more flexible with our industrial zoning, where we have enough of it that fronts on North Bend Way. We're flexible in looking at entertaining those kinds of uses, either with a DA or rezoning. And because we just don't have large areas for commercial use. And if you look at the evolution of our city, that we're getting a lot of a kind of change in where the large population masses are, and when you look at commercial uses that are convenient to them, it's kind of shifting the city toward the east on North Bend Way, and looking We had an interesting comment just this week, and I've never heard this from any of our grocery stores. And the manager of QFC is saying, you know, we've kind of outgrown the size of our store. I'm wondering where we could locate. And we don't have neighborhood commercial zoning that would allow us to build a center and master plan and do a good job and have a number of uses in that center. And Sherry Cooper's site, which is down right where the cross from the Dahlgren site, where the Snoqualmie Valley Trail crosses North Bend Lane, she's got 40 acres there. That would be perfect because you're getting a lot of development further to the east, and you've got a lot of development right in this area. And that's very, very central to these areas. So when we talk about neighborhood commercial, one of the things they said is, gee, if some of this neighborhood commercial fronts up against Snoqualmie Valley Trail and it's too deep, could we not put condominiums up against the trail? Because that kind of density would be somewhat compatible with the neighborhood commercial services. So even the council is saying that's a viable workforce housing type, and I think we're going to get more interest in it. Two things we're going to come back to.
Can I pause?
Yeah.
Everybody can now picture what he's talking about in his mind, because we've got a map right there. I could unroll.
Yeah. Go ahead and use the map and refer to
it. It's one of those where I kind of figure that maybe not everybody can picture the map the way I have it embedded in my map mind.
I'm a big fan of maps.
Shall I play Banner?
Yes, thank you. This is Dahlgren. This is Sherry Cooper's property, and it does have some freeway exposure, by the way. And that's why Dr. Supply likes it. This is the neighborhood commercial they're talking about, but a lot of this stuff has some single family interspersed within it. And if you will recall, that's good, I think we got it. If you will recall, our council took action to get all of the residential other than mixed use out of the neighborhood commercial. And the reason for that is, if you put people in single family in that area, they don't want commercial around. Mm-hmm. And they're going to fight it tooth and nail. And so then you have difficulty using it for commercial use. So I think the concern on their part was, gee, we're not seeing a lot of neighboring commercial. Maybe we have too much.
It was a pendulum. The fear was, with as rapid as the residential was coming at us, the entire neighborhood business was going to end up going residential. Put the brakes on that, and then now it's backing up and saying, well, now what's maybe more logical?
So if I can jump in, because I think we're now starting to get a little bit of field of the topic. Not that it's not a good discussion, but so Dave, what do you need from us relative to...
Well, this would be similar to the other one. If there are any changes that you see would clarify, would make it easier to read, things that you don't understand, you want to be explained, anything to manipulate this, we'd be happy to work with that.
Commissioners? Suggestions? James?
I have one, yeah. Just kind of a clarification, I think. Mm-hmm. Page 4, 17.20.030. Mm-hmm. B4.
Time, please.
That's RCW language, I believe.
Yeah, is that something that I feel like when I was reading through this, that paragraph hung me up on something that I don't think is, if I was doing something that I could give you all of that, a normal person could do that? Or is this driven from more for the staff to say, keep this in mind when you're doing
it? I think there, I'm going to give you an example of kind of highlight what brought this up. But when you have things like condominium projects, the one we have on Park Street didn't have a lot of extra room to meet our requirement for common open space, right?
Sure.
They just couldn't make it work. It didn't work with the layout. And what I suggested to them was, you still have to meet that requirement, and the Tanner Trail goes right by your project, and we have land there. Now, could we have you put an amenity on the Tanner Trail that kids and parents would use, like perhaps a top lot and a place where parents could sit and have lunch or something. Could we do something that's a nice way stop along the trail? And would you be willing to do that? So there are things like, and we're working more and more with the transit agency here, and we haven't had to do as much in the past, but we next need to start identifying where transit stops are. So there are a number of things we're looking at here and saying, let's make sure these provisions for these things within the plan that's submitted, whether it's a commercial plan or whether it's a residential condominium plan, that these things are being shown clearly.
Okay, so and where it lost me was 1, 2, 3, and 5 all seem to be things that you're saying ahead of time, make sure you show these items.
Right.
4 to me seemed more like when you bring your thing, your plan in, we're going to think about this and present what we, you know, try to fit this in.
Can I word that takes my head?
Mm-hmm.
Other places in the code we have essentially language that says meet the requirements on site or at director's discretion,
mm-hmm.
off-site consideration,
right,
something
right,
to that effect, right? Is that with that? You think that might get at the idea versus listing out, hey, you're supposed to anticipate everything.
Yeah, that's kind of where it came to me was as I read that, I'm thinking, man, that's a lot of things to try to anticipate and prove that it's there or not.
Right.
It feels more like something that you're saying, this is more for staff saying, when you look over a plan, let's keep this in mind and see if we can add these items.
Well, as we communicate with folks, we want to make sure that these kinds of things are incorporated, that they're thinking about.
Of course.
The drainage ways are required. I mean, they're required by the, you know, the stormwater manual and that sort of thing. We're always interested in safe routes to schools for kids. Okay, so that's in here. Usually within condominiums and whether you're talking about a VSP for a commercial project or a condominium, you have a lot of private streets, private roads, or privately maintained. We want to be able to show those, show what the widths are, show where the utilities are. These are things that you want to be depicted on the plans.
Right.
It's kind of like when I go down my checklist, are these relevant to my plan and am I showing them?
Okay.
Because what we don't want to have to do is to reject the plan and send it back and say you didn't deal with safe routes to schools, you didn't deal with your private street standards or things like that. So
in a situation where that may not be feasible, is that something that's just handled in a note that says we looked at it and we couldn't do something?
We usually ask for a narrative
from
the developer. So let's say, for instance, we have a problem like we did with the Park Street condos. They say, you know, what they'll usually do is take these little remainder things that are in the parking area and really aren't good open spaces at all, and they'll want credit for it.
Sure.
Well, then you go through this kind of, that just doesn't cut it because it doesn't meet our requirements. So if you're featuring these things in a statement like this, they know that they're important. And when we review the plan, we'll go back, we'll say, hey, it doesn't meet our standards from the other code. But we believe, with a general statement, rather than being really prescriptive, that we can have the flexibility to maybe move some of these things off-site near the project or do some things that will make it work without saying, hey, it's not within the bounds of your property, so you can't do it.
Well, this item 4 does seem pretty prescriptive, and since the document is largely procedural,
yeah,
doesn't seem to address what I think is at least part of what you were getting at, James. So what if there may be some things that aren't applicable? How does the applicant address what is applicable and include it, but also so you, David, you were mentioning, well, we'd like to see a narrative, but mm-hmm. is that communicated somewhere here on how you want to see that these things?
Yeah, generally what people will do when they turn an application in, there's some kind of empirical evidence you put in, you know, the acres, the number of units, that kind of thing. And then they will describe the project for you in the application. They'll have a project description section. And that's where a lot of this stuff comes up. And I have yet to see an application that doesn't have that kind of a presentation in it. It's just to help everybody understand what their objective is.
Okay.
I'm going to take this up a level. This is language out of RCW 5817.
Sure.
Yeah. It's not language that is specifically required for a binding site plan, because binding site plans are technically exempt from RCW 5817.
Okay.
Which gives us a lot of flexibility. This is a language that is required by state law for subdivisions.
Yeah.
And as David was saying, he's trying to, or we are trying to, make this process mimic the subdivision process. Right. So that's why this is. That's why I'm assuming this is in here, and it's something that every subdivision and short plat
right.
has to show that. So the language itself is something that surveyors and developers are used to,
sure.
and I would imagine they know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it's addressed if like your question about well, what if it's not met? What if it's you know NA
yeah.
not applicable? That's usually in a staff report.
Mm-hmm.
Or okay. staff decision document.
And we, yeah, we
if I may, I think to clarify a little bit more my the basis yeah. of my issue here is here the section we're in. I don't have a problem with the language of it by any means. I just
yeah.
think that this section is criteria that you're saying shall be done. To me, as again, I'm not a developer, so I don't know if this may be commonplace for them to just understand how what this means. But to me, as reading it, I have to have something on that plan that identifies every single one of those items ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because of everything else in that section is that way.
From that I'm more seeing it the way you are. It's not the language, it's the where.
Yeah, I don't have a problem. The language isn't an issue. It's where it is in the plan, the code here. Everything else is something that you're supposed to take care of, every item in that list. Here, is that the right place for this language?
Well, if you look at the section heading, it says preliminary binding site plan review decision criteria.
Right.
That's something as an applicant, I want to know what people are going to be thinking about when they look at my plan. And I want to make sure I meet the requirements that have to be met.
Right.
What we have, this kind of prescriptive stuff, if you look at our site plan or our design review regulations, either for subdivisions or commercial projects, mm-hmm. it's very, very prescriptive. And it lays out how much square footage for private open space you have to have and that kind of thing. And these kinds of projects that come in, we deal with, say, a residential condominium very similarly to how we deal with an apartment in terms of private open space and common area facilities and rec facilities and private open space and stuff like that. We consider them similar products.
Okay. I'm going to withdraw my product comment. I get it now.
Scott, you have something else?
Yeah, and I'm so confused now that I'm reading this a little bit more closely. B1, 2, and 3 do not read to me as decision criteria. They read, as James pointed out, as things that should be or need to be on part of the application materials. 4, the paragraph we've been talking about, is normally in decision criteria, like for plat.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say 5 is part of the decision criteria. So I'm.
It feels like a blank.
Yeah. So maybe take a closer look at that mm-hmm. and ask what's the decision criteria versus what is information that you want to see with the application.
Which is
a combination of them.
Mostly on page 3 previous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like all applicable processing fees. That's not a decision criteria to me. That's just a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And this originally was under a section heading called requirements and limitations.
Mm-hmm.
So that might help.
Mm-hmm.
I understand your point.
Okay.
That was my one.
Okay. No, good. Commissioners, anything else? No. So let's the next steps, the timeline for this. So you've got some
correcting, taking 2 documents and taking your recommendations, and when we when you move toward a motion on this one of what you'd like me to address before I bring it back, you can kind of indicate what that would be. What we will do is we'll advertise these for public hearing for your next meeting. We'll have public hearings on both of them. And then take them forward to the council.
Okay, so the suggested edits or suggestions right. will be incorporated when it comes.
When
we see it.
Next time we see it, you see the changes.
And then, will there be any other input from council or any other committees prior to...
Usually what we do with these is anything that has to do with code through our department, we take through the CED committee, because the council doesn't want to see anything on their agenda that hasn't been through those committees. Part of the reason is they want to have at least three members of the council who have vetted it quite a bit, because that's where their expertise is supposed to be going. There are others on the TPW committee, and there are other committees. But in this case, what they do is they make the motion, and they are kind of the first line of saying, why do you support this? They indicate why they support it. And they participate insofar as the council says, well, did you talk about this, or I have a concern about this. If the committee has already dealt with that, then the chair of the committee that's made the motion will indicate what that conversation was about.
Right.
Or they'll go to staff and say, well, we did talk about that. Do you want to, you know, take them through it?
Right. I'm just trying to get a sense of when we see the ordinance in advance of the public hearing, will it reflect comments that you've gotten here from the Planning Commission, or will we see comments that came from other sources?
No, just from this body.
Okay.
I think maybe part of where you're also going is, when we hold that public hearing, we may or may not choose to take action.
Exactly. That was my next follow-up.
Yeah.
Is from a procedural standpoint,
right.
We'll take the public hearing depending on
what comments we get.
Or what other input we have. We may or may not take action.
Yeah.
But you would be seeking, ideally,
right.
Action at the public hearing, following the public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Right. Subject to whatever comments we get. Yeah. Susan?
I'm wondering, do you have a workflow that goes along with this document that says, you know...
Here's the process it goes through to a document.
Right. And here's
the document. We should prepare a little flowchart for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should sure do that. Yeah. Yeah, this process is kind of unique here. Because everything goes through a subcommittee of the council, or it doesn't get on the agenda.
Right.
Unless it's a really time-sensitive thing where we're going to miss a grant or something like that.
When it is code like this, am I correct that even if we hold our public hearing, we pass a document,
mm-hmm.
and it goes to the committee and they change nothing, you still are required to hold the public hearing prior to council adoption?
It was
a single.
Usually what we do, you require one public hearing.
One public.
And since you're advisory to the council, the council prefers that you hold the hearing and vet it and get that input before they get it.
Okay.
Because then it's been before the public, they've taken a recommendation from you. The more steps it has to go through, particularly through public hearing when the public gets involved, the more distance there is from your recommendation to their recommendation. So what they like to see is that it's been through the public hearing,
yeah.
it's been through the committee, and this is one of the reasons that our council is as efficient as it is. I mean, they do get your business quickly, they trust the committee process, and they're willing to move on things once you've had a hearing and the committee's dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can criticize processes one way or another, saying too many steps or whatever, but what I'm finding is, you know, you go to other council meetings of cities in this area, you can be there for 4 or 5 hours. You go to our meeting, and it's probably an hour to an hour and a half, and they're done. And they understand the issues.
Mm-hmm. Can I flip it? Is there any level of change that the committee may do after the Planning Commission has passed with its public hearing?
They can.
Not and, required.
And if it's really substantial, then I will recommend that we advertise it for public hearing. If we really are going to turn this thing on its head, and it's going to be quite different from what people saw, then the hearing really isn't valid unless they see the final document.
Which I think you recommended recently.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You might want to.
And what I will do with our committee is I will ask the committee, I'll say, this is a substantial change. Do you want me, A, to take it back to the commission for a hearing again? Or are you willing to take this forward and have a public hearing at the council level? And that's the kind of question I ask them.
Okay. So is there any time sensitivity to taking action on this?
All right.
So if
Right. There's a lot of things we're doing to the code to clean it up right now, because we can't accept any additional residential subdivisions till our plant is expanded and we're concentrating on commercial. So it's a good time period to get some of this stuff done.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Another quick procedural question. When do you submit this to Department of Commerce?
Usually we submit it to them right after council action, because they have what the council acted on, but there's still an appeal period in case there's a real issue that comes up with them.
There's 60, but I'm talking about the 60-day review, which you can get down to 10 if you ask nicely.
Yeah, but we do it quite often.
And but I mean prior to adoption, because you submit twice, prior to adoption.
Yeah. And usually Jamie is handling all of the those reviews, mm-hmm. and she'll do it between commission and council.
Okay.
But they do want, once we've adopted it, they want it.
Yeah. There's a deadline of 10 yes. days, I think, or 10 days.
I think. Okay. Some code seems to me when she's brought it to us, she said that this has already been submitted and not responded to yet. Yeah, something to that.
Well, we got a recent clarification of those ordinances or actions that you take that don't have a physical impact to the environment and are therefore exempt from SEPA. But they get a bite at the apple in the SEPA process too. So if any of these are subject to SEPA, they get them with the SEPA review. And then they get the other two reviews as well. So
my experience is so cities have to submit all ordinance growth management related ordinance changes to the State Department of Commerce for review, and they farm it out to other state agencies that might have an interest. And it used to be a 60-day review, and then we got the process changed so they could expedite it in 10 days and this kind of stuff. They would easily say, we'll do it in 10 days.
Yeah.
And then 10 days, 2 weeks later, you get an email back saying, we don't have any comments. So that's what I'm talking about. I was just curious, we're in the process, because when I used to submit those things, we would kind of assess where we were in the timeline. If it was something simple like mm-hmm. this, we might submit it even before it went to the Planning Commission, mm-hmm. Just to get the timing going.
Yeah.
And then if there were any significant changes, then we would just let them know. And
I'll have a chat with her and see how that's going. Yeah.
It sounds like it's working well.
So far we've met all of the submittal requirements, and we asked nicely for 10 days. We usually get it.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we're done with this topic. We'll see it in a couple of weeks when it's public hearing.
And the main thing that we're going to concentrate on is that list of criteria and whether it belongs there.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So that wraps up the formal agenda for the night. Commissioners, anything else for the good of the order before we seek a motion to adjourn?
Just a question and to look forward. So we're planning a November 14 meeting. Are we presuming we're not holding, I'm assuming, the second November meeting?
Yeah.
Are we likely to have just one more meeting after the 14th this year?
Mm-hmm. One in December.
In December. Yeah.
So one in November, mm-hmm. one in December.
Okay. We jump right in the middle of the holiday season.
Right.
Both.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I have something for the good of the order.
Yes.
It is flu season, so everybody should get their flu shots. It helps everybody.
Yes.
And you don't have to, but the more people that get it, the better. So.
Yep. Good recommendation. Thank you. Anybody else?
Trick or Treat Street by the North Bend Downtown Foundation is staying involved. 47 different businesses, so that's a lot. And we're hoping that we can have city officials, including the commissioners here and council members and mayor, be dressed up and walk through town and have a great time. That's a thought or a hope. And there'll be costume awards and presentations.
Fun time.
Bring your kids and your grandkids. Or be a kid.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right. Hearing none. Is there a motion to adjourn?
We didn't get a motion yet tonight.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Commissioner Colin has moved to adjourn tonight's meeting, seconded by Commissioner McFarland. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Vote nay just once.